Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward. Together, that's exactly where we're going to go. God bless.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And this is Rewind, the combination of Wisconsin Eye and Wis Politics. We can review first. Wis Eye was there. First, we're going to take a look at Madison Mayor Paul Soglin says it's a two-person race, Democrat to be for governor. He and Tony Evers, that will come as news to about six or eight other candidates. The Dark Star controversy continues to roil the Capitol and the state Supreme Court. Here's oral arguments in the case of suspended Marquette professor John McAdams. Was Mr. McAdams' blog a violation that could get him fired or free speech? Wis Eye was there.
The borders are clearly not secure. I think whether you're Democrat or Republican, I don't think there's many that would doubt that. The question is how best to act on that. But I think it's appropriate for us to take action to secure the border. And if the President of the United States were to ask the state of Wisconsin to call up individuals from the National Guard, we would.
I mean, it is a two-person race. That's not to say that something very unusual might happen. But right now, Evers and I are within a couple of percentage points. And the good news from our polling, and I have not shared everything with you, is that the more information that voters get about all of us, proportionately, I go up the greatest.
Here's where we're going in the future. We released concepts for two vehicles that we're going to produce. One on the left is the new Roadster. So this is a supercar. So it starts at $200,000 for the base version. 0 to 60 in 1.9 seconds. 620 miles of range. So it shows what you can do with this type of technology and that we're just kind of scratching the surface in terms of performance.
Instead of paying what it owes, Walmart is exploiting a ridiculous loophole in our tax code that allows them to lower the value of their stores, sometimes up to 50%, and thereby pay millions less in property taxes.
This is the inaugural meeting of the full Committee on International Commerce and Affairs.
And I hope that this will be one of the most bipartisan committees because it's something we can all agree on, which is trying to help our businesses to grow and expand to create family-supporting jobs right here in Wisconsin.
Are you asking this court to supersede the provisions of a private employer-employee contract?
Absolutely not. In this context, we're simply asking that the contract be enforced. If Marquette doesn't want to make these commitments to its employees, it doesn't have to do so. Marquette chose this. They chose it because they thought it was consistent with their mission, and quite frankly, if they didn't do it, that it would hurt their reputation and they wouldn't be able to attract the kind of faculty that they want.
The conduct that brings us here today is that of a professor, associate professor of political science who, one, intentionally used a student teacher's name and link to her contact information. But the way this works is you rev up a hostile audience, you put the person's name and a way to get their contact information in front of them, and this is what results. And the Faculty Hearing Committee again said that he did this in order to expose her to negative comments, and it was his calculated goal that this would happen. Immediately after writing the blog post, he began sending it out to multiple news outlets and fan the flames.
Okay, JR, as of May 15th, you and your talented wife can submit a claim for $100 for your two boys. Yep. And that was the law that Governor Walker signed this week. Mm-hmm. That was no surprise.
No.
But $122 million, that isn't going to be there. It's a one-time tax rebate. And talk to me about the timing. When is that paid?
May 15th, you begin to apply, I believe, for the checks. They should arrive right in time for the sales tax holiday in August that he expanded from 2 days to five.
Right.
Added about $3 million to the cost, but which is interesting. If you go back to the whole debate about this rebate plus the sales tax holiday, the Assembly reached a deal with Governor Walker to add the sales tax holiday to the rebate. The Senate hated the idea, but then they accepted a modified version and set, like, you know, these price points, because really what was going to be $100, basically anything at $100,
yep,
not everything, but a lot of stuff at $100 would count. The Senate version was, the compromise was computer supplies, clothes, and some school supplies, a certain marks. That was their way to kind of limit it. Walker expanded it to 5 days.
He did. The argument he went back to the Assembly position.
But not on the price points, so the price points remain. Right. But he went longer one to, in his words, you know, if you only have 2 days, some people might not make it out. So, and they're happy at the headlines of, you know, Walker expanded the tax cut with his veto pen.
Yeah, and you and I have heard governors say that good fiscal decisions is good politics. Is this good politics for someone seeking a third term?
Good question. I mean, they think it's a winner, but Dems have been hammering it as being a bribe for voters, and even Republicans quietly talk about how gimmicky the whole thing is to do this. It also, by the way, helped take a surplus that was going to be $460 million mid-2019,
yeah,
down to about $180 million. So Bob Lang at Fiscal Bureau said at Joint Finance this week that after all the bills they had passed, they're looking at about $185 million in a net balance. That means you have to have $75 million set aside in the statutory balance,
yep,
110 on top of that. But by expanding the sales tax holiday by 3 days, Walker took another $3 million off. So we're down to about $180 million, which if you do some rough math, is right about a half of a percent of the GPR spending for the entire two-year period.
But I got an email this week saying, hasn't the governor signed a whole lot of spending in the last 6 months?
That's what took down that 460 down to 180. You know, right, that's where it was. The bulk of it, though, was the sales tax holiday and this per-child credit.
Yeah. Okay, moving on. Four developments today, four developments this week in the campaign for governor. Let's mm-hmm. open with the governor telling reporters he would, quote, never willingly leave the job and would serve all 4 years of a third term. Let's listen to a few seconds of the governor in the Capitol this week.
Tommy Thompson told me, if not once, 1,000 times, his worst day as governor was better than his best day in the cabinet. So I can unequivocally, without hesitation, tell you I will never willingly leave the role as governor through the end of this next coming term. I'm running for re-election to serve a full term. I respect and honor those who serve in the cabinet, just as I do in my own state. But with that piece of advice alone from Tommy Thompson, he has pounded it into my head over the years, and I can see exactly why he did that, that you can get much, much, much more done as a governor, and it's much, much more fulfilling being a governor than it is being in the cabinet.
J.R., how do you interpret the governor's statement? He will not go to Washington to join the Trump administration, and he would serve a full third term, 4 years, if elected.
Well, on the one hand,
parse that for me.
He learned his lesson from in 2015. He won re-election, was almost out the door immediately to look at running for president, and then kind of learned his lesson about flirting with going somewhere else. If you're a cynic, you say, so what? And Governor Walker, when he's county executive Walker, was asked running in 2008, I think, if he'd run for governor, and kind of gave a answer that allowed him some wiggle room. When he ran for re-election in 2014, he was asked if he'd run for president in 16, gave another answer that gave him some wiggle room. So the question for some people is, how ironclad is his promise? But to me, the math for Walker is not about running during this term. It's about 24. So if he wins re-election, if he wins re-election in 18, he begins serving in January of 19. That term ends in January of 23. What is 1 year from January 23? The Iowa caucus in 24. So either way, barring President Trump not seeking re-election, saying he made America great again and walks away, you're pretty much guaranteed an open shot at the presidency in 2024. So for Walker, he has to be relevant until then. He can't lose. That'd be a big blow.
Yeah.
But this is, I think he would serve the full term because of that.
Okay, but if President Trump, for whatever reason, is not a factor in 2020, can you see our governor not running?
He has said he would not run for governor, president, against any governor. Again, go back and look at, like, County Executive Walker and Governor Walker. Mm-hmm. But it's hard to see him doing that and being successful. Now, he wouldn't have to worry about a fourth term because he's basically said that third term was it, though he's also kind of indicated two terms was enough for anybody to be governor.
He said that once.
So there's that question. I guess we're getting a lot of hypotheticals right now about what Walker would be, but he's trying to send a message of, I learned my lesson from going to flirt for the presidency in 15. I'm locked in. If I win re-election, I will stay here, period. Kay. That's what he wants voters to understand.
Okay, new subject. The trial balloon that surprised me. Tom Barrett is thinking about running again. Now, he's run three times, and I want to go through the numbers, JR. He lost the 2002 primary to Jim Doyle. Doyle got 38%, and Mr. Barrett, the mayor of Milwaukee, got 34%. When he was a Democratic candidate, against Scott Walker in 2010, Mr. Barrett got 46.5%. Mr. Walker got 52%. When he was a nominee in the recall election in 2012, Mr. Barrett again got 46.5%, but Mr. Walker got 53%. This would be four times. Mm-hmm. Do you really think Tom Barrett is going to run for governor?
In talking to people who know him way better than I do, I think the percentages was way less than 50-50 that he would run. The issue, from what I can understand, is Barrett was making calls expressing concern about the field. And word out got about those calls, and they kind of morphed into kind of, well, you know, maybe he would run for this. Some musing about maybe getting in. I don't know how serious it is. I mean, think about it. We are in mid-April, getting close to late April. Nomination papers are due June 1st. I mean, there is a window that is closing to actually just get on the ballot. Not only that, we are less than 4 months out from the primary. You have to build an operation from the ground up to run statewide. Now, obviously the mayor has leftover infrastructure from his past bids, volunteers, those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't happen in an overnight. You have to have time to build that. He also has $622,000 in the bank, which is more than a Democratic candidate had at the end of 2017. So it gives him a platform. He's also mayor of the largest city in Wisconsin. He's run statewide before. He has name ID. The issue for Barrett is, do people want him to run for governor? And if he ran for governor, does Governor Walker want to face him? I mean, in talking to Republicans, they love the opportunity to face Tom Barrett. They think the playbook is there. We have not seen many Milwaukee candidates win statewide in Wisconsin history, right? I mean, Rebecca Dallet is an exception to that rule, so is Scott Walker. But typically, outstate is not a big fan of Milwaukee. So you run an anti-Milwaukee campaign. You talk about how much human waste MMSD dumps in Lake Michigan every year. You dust off the ads from 10 and 12. There's your playbook against Tom Barrett. The flip side, what must be running through Barrett's head, is he ran against a wave election in 2010. There was a dynamic of the recall in 12 where people maybe don't like what Walker did, but don't like the idea of a recall.
Yeah.
Now, instead of having a headwind, he has wind behind his back, possibly. He could get in. Nobody in that primary field is, you know, breaking away from the pack. So someone like Barrett could get in and be a force right away. The question is, can he win in November? I'm not sure it's clear right now.
Well, former Doyle aide Thad Nation, I think, told the Journal Sentinel that the odds were less than 10%. So Thad Nation has been around Wisconsin Democratic politics a long time.
If Barrett got in, would the national money come? Like, if he won the nomination, would the national money come? Is he the kind of candidate that could do this? In talking to operatives all week long, I did not find a single Democratic operative who was excited about the idea of Tom Barrett as a nominee. Yeah. At the same time, they're also honest that nobody's breaking free from that pack that we have. And part of the reason for that is none of them is getting a foothold financially and really putting distance between themselves and the rest of the pack. And until they do that, they can't get up on the air. They get up on the air, they can't get their name out there because people just don't know who these folks are.
Which is a perfect segue to this. The Mayor Soglin campaign does a poll, and they're proud of it, mm-hmm. even though it shows Tony Evers at 30% and Soglin at 17%. And when I was there, Soglin says it's a two-person race. Now, isn't it strange that there was another press release today from the Soglin campaign? It's a two-person race. Is it really?
Not to the other people in the race, no. What Soglin's trying to make the argument is that he starts with this foundation. Now, the other piece of that poll is after they read a paragraph about each candidate, it closed at 25-23. Well, they didn't release that paragraph, so we don't know what they said about these guys. We don't know how much money Mayor Soglin is going to raise between now and end of June that we'll see in July how strong they are. The reality is a poll at this point in the Democratic primary is really a measure of name ID, period. If there's There are no ads. There's nothing driving attention. Oh, by the way, these guys have to fight through a crazy end of legislative session, state Supreme Court race. Now they have special elections. There's constantly something drawing attention away from the primary.
Yeah.
The question becomes, how much money can these guys raise to get on TV and radio and do digital ads? We're looking at maybe a 3-4 week sprint of paid media, maybe longer, like after July 4th, which, by the way, great time to be on TV in Wisconsin in the dead of summer, right? So how do these guys craft a coherent message and pay through paid media to reach voters, and then we'll see numbers move? That's the takeaway I've got for people all week, is that until they're on TV and radio, it's not going to, these polls don't really matter a lot.
But the final thing on the emerging race for governor that I want to touch on is the devil's advocate radio co-host, Mike Crute, says he's in as a Democratic candidate. I didn't see this coming. I don't understand this. Can you help me?
The people I talked to see zero path for him to win.
Okay.
Unless he had personal resources to bring to the table to really, you know, blow these guys out of the water, they don't see it. Of course, one postscript about the polling stuff, name ID is what wins races. So with Tony Evers starting out with this foundation, he's got a good base to start from. Can he build off of that 30% and get to 40? If you get to 40% in an 8-, 9-, 10-way real candidate race, you're in pretty good shape.
Okay. This week was the deadline for candidates to file in two special elections. In the first Senate district, you had Republicans, no surprises there, Representative Andre Jacques and Alex Renard, and one Democratic candidate, Economic Development Director Caleb Frostman. Let's talk about the first Senate district first, because there was a dust-up over language in a Jacques campaign brochure from Governor Walker praising him. But yeah, the governor's people say that's not an endorsement?
They are neutral. They're not endorsing. I mean, they're both looking for a way to kind of get attention. Alex Renard saw his first TV ad this week,
yeah,
calling himself a job creator. You know, no offense, he's 24 years old, working his parents' company. So there are some folks who have a hard time buying that concept. But this is going to be a low turnout primary. Who's going to be able to get people to the polls? Who's going to get attention? There's a perception that Republicans in Madison want to see Renard get through because they think he's a better fit for the district. The Dalit Skrenik numbers are not perfect because it's not truly a partisan race, but that district went 56% for Dalit, I think. So there's an opportunity there for Democrats to pick off a Republican-leaning seat in a special election.
Okay.
But, oh, by the way, if you look at the timelines, the primary's in mid-May, right?
Yeah.
The deadline to file for November is June 1st. So these guys will have to run for the primary and also possibly certain nomination papers in the ballot for November.
For November.
And what do you do if you're one of these two guys and you lose the primary? Then do you end up running again in the August primary? Then, mm-hmm, for November, do you go run for an assembly seat? And what happens if either side ends up with these guys are kind of new, some of them, a dud candidate who loses badly in June, then you're stuck with him for November? It's a fascinating, like, what ifs with
Alex Renard also said he would not take any pay, mm-hmm, if elected in a special election.
Trent runs an outsider. He wants to cast himself as somebody who's not part of, okay, Madison. You know, again, the job creator, outsider, like kind of that, not part of the swamp thing.
Right. And a footnote, I'll be interviewing candidates in the Senate District Number 1 on May 3rd. Okay, any surprises in the 42nd Assembly District? Four Republicans, Plumer, Zimmerman, Locke Murphy, and Schroeder, and one Democrat, Grove, Lodi alderperson.
Spencer Zimmerman, you have to note that he's run for, like, I think several different assembly seats.
He ran for the 58th.
Which is nowhere near the 42nd, which is nowhere near where he lives, by the way. So he's kind of like this perennial candidate, like, kind of thing. So he's not really a serious threat to the nomination. The folks, some Republicans want to see Plumer get through. He's kind of their preferred candidate,
yeah,
the one that they've kind of found and are working with right now. But you never know.
And a footnote, I'll be interviewing candidates in a special election for Assembly District 42, and that is on May 7th. Okay, the Elections Commission this week approved $7 million in federal Help America Vote Act, million that would go for new security code, security training, hire IT contractors, and require a match of $348,000. This is all going to go through, and the emphasis here is security, mm-hmm, backdrop, of course, the context, Russian potential hacking.
Yeah, also a source of revenue to bring positions on board does not require getting approval from the legislature after that whole dust-up about the old GEB employees and that whole nine yards. Remember, Scott Fitzgerald talked at one time about using their request for three new employees to open the door to going after legal counsel.
Right.
This is also a way to put that whole issue to rest and take that off the table, focus on the federal funds, and do everything that way.
Right. So, we're well, as you say, we've come a long way with the Elections Commission. They finally have an administrator that is acceptable to the Republicans, and now they're getting this federal cash, and they're focusing on security issues.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Let's take a moment right now and recognize a pure pioneer, Val Phillips. An amazing career. When you look at that, she was elected to the Milwaukee Common Council in 56.
Mm-hmm.
She introduced a open housing ordinance every 90 days. And she was the first African-American to be elected to the council, to graduate from the UW-Madison Law School, and first African-American to be elected a judge, Democratic National Committee in 1960. She said, yes, she knew Martin Luther King. She wished she had an opportunity to get to know him better. Pretty remarkable figure,
mm-hmm.
right?
First non-white candidate elected statewide in Wisconsin, 1978.
Secretary of State. Right.
Interesting post note, that was because Doug La Follette left that seat to run for lieutenant governor.
Yeah.
He came back in 82 and beat her in a primary. Imagine like that brouhaha if it happened now. Yeah, a remarkable career in level of, and when you're named first on that many things, that's fairly impressive.
Right, and that was one quote that I want to highlight here, which she said, whenever I was the first black, I was also usually the first woman. There were certain things you just couldn't do. You certainly had to bite your lip, and you couldn't show a tear because that, of course, would be too female. A fitting tribute to a civil rights pioneer, Milwaukee's Val Phillips. Okay, let's go to your stock report.
So, rising Ron Kind. So now Paul Ryan is not seeing re-election. Ron Kind is the king of the campaign war chest in the congressional delegation. He reported $3 million in the bank at the end of March. If you look at the landscape to this fall, 2 years ago, Donald Trump won that congressional district by like 4 points over Hillary Clinton. It was like a shockwave. Oh, Ron Kind's in trouble in 2018. Fast forward to now. Can you see a Republican beating a Democratic incumbent in this environment in a Democratic-leaning seat? Not people I talk to don't. They just, the tide has turned so much. And then the guy looking to run against him had like less than $100,000 in the bank. You know,
Is it somebody that's run before?
Yes, he got added to the first tier of the Young Guns program, even though he's a 32 veteran of the Armed Forces, so he's not really a young gun, but they have these tiers. The first tier is basically like, we're keeping an eye on you. They're not giving any money yet, not giving any staff, but they're going to keep an eye on him. It just looks like Ron Kind's in good position to win re-election this fall. An interesting post note, everybody talked about Western Wisconsin what happened in 2016 with Donald Trump. Because Ron Kind was unchallenged in 16, the opportunity to beat him wasn't there for Republicans. On the flip side, there's a what if now of what if Ron Kind had a challenger in 2016?
Yeah.
What if he ran a campaign in 16? Has Operation Turning People Out? Would you have seen an assembly district in Western Wisconsin, Chris Danos go to Craig Prochnowski? Would you have seen Pat Teston beat Julie Lassa at that Senate seat? Would you have seen Trump do so well and Democrats, Jennifer Schilling barely hang on in La Crosse for her Senate seat? Would have made a difference to have him running an operation. And don't forget the small margin in Wisconsin, because that have impacted the statewide results. But
okay,
that's all what ifs and looking back 2020.
But I'm convinced he's a good rising. Okay, mixed.
So Brian Stile, the field is basically cleared of top tier Republican candidates for Brian Stile to be the next GOP, you know, front runner to replace Paul Ryan. What's been interesting is the way it cleared so quickly. And in talking to people, it wasn't any surprise why his assembly members didn't run for this congressional seat, because the reality of they're in safe assembly seats, you have to raise a couple, $3 million maybe in a 4, 5, 6 month sprint. You've got a primary in August. You know, you have to hit the ground running and have an apparatus behind you. It's easy to see making those calls and going, oh wait, I don't have that. Stile had been interested in running in 2012 if Paul Ryan won the vice presidency and stepped down. He was all primed to do that. Obviously, Ryan did not win the vice presidency, so it didn't happen. But my impression is that the second Paul Ryan said, I'm not running, Brian Stile was on the phone lining people up to run. Now, the flip side is he's running an open seat in a might be a bad year for Republicans. He is 2.3 million behind Randy Bryce, at the moment at least. Bryce has had that much in the bank. Kathy Myers, don't forget her, is running for the nomination. Oh, by the way, Peter Barca is kicking the tires on a run for Congress.
Is he still kicking the tires?
From what I can tell, he is. And talk to people, there's a mixed perception about that. I mean, on the one hand, Republicans love that, seeing it's a sign of what people would think about Randy Brice, that Brice was just a vessel for people who don't like Paul Ryan to kind of pump money into. But now that Paul Ryan's not there, the kind of Brice sheen is worn off. The flip side is progressives going, wait a second. In their minds, Randy Brice pushed Paul Ryan out of the seat. Now, Republicans bristle at that notion. But for progressives, some of them at least, if you are Peter Barker saying, thanks for doing that, Randy, but now supposed to let me take over, it's like, whoa, where were you? This is a real race. So
is
there's
the,
that issue.
Is the only potential challenger to style in a primary former Racine County Executive Jim Ladwig? Has he said whether he's in or out?
I have not heard for sure. Now, Paul Nehlen is still running for GOP nomination. Paul Nehlen is an embarrassment to the Republican Party. They don't have nothing to do with him. There's an Army vet who had filed the run before Ryan announced his retirement. There are a couple other kind of, I think, people looking at or getting in. But of top-tier candidates, Brian Stile is going to be it. The question becomes, what's the environment like, and how much harder does it hold this seat with an open seat and not a non-Paul Ryan in there? Because Paul Ryan, by the way, had $10.5 million in the bank at the end of March.
Right.
He doesn't have that.
Right. Okay, falling?
So Republican incumbents.
You and I were surprised.
There's always one surprise. Every session there's one surprise,
and there
right?
may be some more.
This one, Joel Clayfish caught everybody off guard. It's what's so interesting is it was so sudden, the reaction was, there's got to be something going on. There's got to be something pushing this. But I keep getting back, no, it's just that he wants to spend more time with his kids.
Which is that's the same script that Paul Ryan wrote.
And maybe he wants to go out and make more money. I mean, you know, you've got two parents who are working in state government. They're not any stretch of the imagination like doing poorly, but it's not what you could possibly make if you're out there doing something else. I mean, public lieutenant governor's office is not a lucrative job if you want, you know, to make big bucks. So this could be an opportunity for him to go out and do something different, get a job in the private sector, make some more money. Right. But now we're seeing we're up to 18 lawmakers who started the session in January who are not coming back for sure to their seats after this session. Now, some are running for other seats, but we're tilted now 13 Republican retirements and 5 Democratic ones.
Yep.
Of those seats, though, you go through the list, there are only a handful, you know, like Narasin's seat, that's one to really watch. Rips in June, that special election, that's going to be a key one to see where the enthusiasm is. That's a Republican-leaning seat, you know, but Dallet did won it barely. So if you use Dallet as the high watermark for progressives right now, she got just barely 50.1%. On the Senate side, Harsdorff's seat's already been lost to Democrats. Lessays is going to be tough to hold in this environment. Dallet, again, won 54, 55%, something like that. She's got Renard and Jock going to hold on. The Vukmir seat is fascinating to watch because if you go back and look at 2016, the collapse among Republicans with suburban voters is epitomized in the Kayanga Assembly seat and the Vukmir Senate seat. Those are like 60% Walker districts in 14, and in 16 they were like neck and neck. So what's going on there? Will they rebound to where they were before?
That's a good point.
And then the Moulton seat up in western Wisconsin, that's going to be a key one to watch for control of the Senate. Democrats in the Senate would be ecstatic if they beat Howard Markline in a Democratic-leaning seat, and they could pick up the Moulton seat or the first, they would be ecstatic.
Let's say.
If they got all three, they would be like over the moon. Winning control of the Senate is going to be tough, but there's ways to see them making progress. There's also the reality of if these seats return to their normal performance, you know, even in a not great year, Republicans can hold on.
Okay. Before we close, let's just note that McAdams case that the Supreme Court heard yesterday, that's a big potential national precedent. I think that's a huge deal.
It'd be fascinating to watch. Lots and lots and lots of groups weighed in. It was interesting that those backing McAdams were making a free speech case.
Yes.
While Marquette and groups like WMC wait on their behalf try to make an employment case.
Right, a contract case. Okay, I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And just as programming note, you and Jesse Opoyan of the Cap Times will fill in for me next week, upholding the high standards.
Do our best.
That's Rewind for April 20th.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.